thing in the world. That's never not going
but
to be.
But it's also one of those
things.
I think it's
and
one
Hamlet
of those,
can't get past childhood.
Right.
It's just, like,
it's one of those beautiful plays where anybody, depending on their point in their lives, can watch the same production and be sympathetic with a separate character.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think that's also what keeps it alive, is you can watch it not only through generations, but your whole life, and still have it find different pieces that are important.
Yeah.
I mean, Stephen Sondheim talks about how, like, Stephen Sondheim uses Booth as an example for how it can be relatable throughout the ages.
Yeah.
Booth says at the end of Assassins, attention must be paid, and he is very clearly making a reference.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so I think you're absolutely right there.
Yeah, I think that is going to be the contemporary play to us. That is going to be the and before we had this meeting, I was looking at lists of right now what people think the 100 greatest plays in the world are, and Hamlet was at the top of the list. That's a whole other can of worms. But
I talk about it if you want me to.
I talk about it, but we'll save that for another time because we can spend 2 hours on that.
Yeah, sure.
The number one contemporary play that was on there, and I was always number two or three on the list after or just before Importance of Being Earnest, was Death of a Salesman. And it's just because people recognize that. If you've never, if you don't even know who Arthur Miller is, you know something about Death of a Salesman.
Yeah. Which actually brings me to, if you don't mind, Brian, me bringing the conversation to a different question.
Well, I was gonna give my opinion.
Brian hasn't shared his opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I apologize. Go ahead. I'm giving him another beer.
Okay, so I can't garner specific enough opinion as to a particular play that will last, because I think there are too many I could mention, and so I'm going to go with the canon of a particular author, and I'm going to go with Neil Simon. I think Neil Simon's the American Shakespeare.
What would you define, how do you define Shakespeare in that respect? How do you define him? What do you think he has that
breadth of material, like breadth of material, like he can write a straight comedy that's just absolutely silly, and that's all there is to it. That's just a plot piece, or he can not. He can write a play he can write a play like Brighton Beach Memoirs or any of the Yonkers series, which is basically autobiographical and is funny. But is also very dramatic. Or my favorite play of his, the Prisoner of Second Avenue, which is a comedy, but in which nothing, like, if you were in that situation, you would find none of it funny.
Right.
Like, it's only funny from the outside.
That's pretty genius.
And everyone can, I think, enjoy Neil Simon.
How many plays has Neil Simon written?
I'm just curious.
I can look
Do you
it
know?
Up.
Okay.
I would have to look
He's written a lot.
A lot. And I think Neil Simon is obviously phenomenal, but he's on that list of contemporary writers where, like, I've read his plays, and I've been in scenes from his plays, but I've never been like, he's the most amazing, which is where I completely differ from you, Brian, because I know he's your favorite. I don't know about that.
I think Neil Simon has definitely earned a place in the modern drama textbook. In 20 years?
Absolutely.
He has written over 30 plays and nearly the same number of screenplays.
Yeah.
He's written a lot of movies. He's written...
Can we talk about that for a moment?
About movies?
About the change in format in whatever, that theater was the thing when the classical plays were being written, but it's not the thing anymore. I think television is the thing right now in 2014
versus completed series.
I don't know. Can we?
Well, that's
I did research.
You did research.
I did research.
Then it can be this discussion.
Right.
Which actually, I think I did research in reaction to the question that you asked, Sarah. So
okay.
Why don't we actually start there, Brian? Do you mind if we start with Sarah's question?
I think that's a really interesting topic, and that's a whole.
I'm gonna. The question
what
that
is not the format, the
medium.
The medium has changed.
Sarah sent in a question.
That was very long-winded.
I'm just going to read it verbatim,
okay.
And so I'm going to ask you to sort of sum up what you were trying to ask. Because when I first read it, I wasn't entirely sure.
I saw that happening in my head. I saw it.
So, the question you asked was as follows. Shows that are now classic, that were modern when they were written, i.e. Ernest, are they still produced in the same way? Would there be a difference to the show if it were produced present day as either a modern or a classic piece? Basically, what makes a show classic? Is it simply a date it was written, or is it the style of production? I would also like to add to that, or popularity, but maybe we already covered that enough.
So can you clear that up a little?
Yes, absolutely. The specific play that I was thinking of when I came up with this question is Ernest, because when it was written, it was so incredibly modern to the minute. And when I... my thought was, beyond a date, it's almost what we sort of talked about, beyond a date, what makes a show a classic piece? Because when Wilde wrote it, it was obviously to the moment. And when we do it now, we produce it as a classic piece. If we were to produce it, is there a different style? Is there a way we elevate ourselves beyond what would just be common in that day and age that makes it a classic play that we put on now?
I'm not sure if this really sort of answers your question or not, but in the research for the production of Ernest that we just did, Katie Call and I discovered that there was a very distinct point at which Ernest ceased to be a modern piece and started to be a period piece. It was right around, don't quote me on this, but I think that in 1926 or something, in the 1920s, suddenly they started doing Ernest and it ceased to be produced as being a contemporary piece. From 1895, when it was first produced, all the way into the 1920s, it was just done, this could be right now.
Okay.
And in 1920s, it was like, okay, we need to start establishing that this happened at the turn of the century. And so there was a change there where they thought to themselves, suddenly this play needs to be about the turn of the century, needs to be about the mannerisms and the culture that defined England.
Now we're costuming
and
people.
Which is right where
I feel Rent is right now.
Exactly. And that's when it becomes... that's when it becomes something else. It becomes a period piece because it has to be costumed. An 80s movie or an 80s play at this point, something set in the 1980s is in my opinion, a period piece at this point.
Right.
Just
there
budget-wise, you're going to have...
More people in this room than not who were not alive in the 80s.
Oh, God.
You know?
That's awful.
That's true.
But it is true. We are in the majority in this room. And but the thing is, like, for instance, Angels in America, you can't produce that as a modern piece.
No.
For multiple reasons. One of them being that it's primarily about Reaganism.
Yeah.
There are historical figures in it.
But actually, I think I started out with Ernest, but now thinking about it more, I think something... What I want to talk about is something more like unrehearsed Shakespeare. When I started watching Shakespeare, when I started going to see Shakespeare, when I started watching Shakespeare, it was this elevated, it was this beyond, it was this this smarter language, this elevated language. And the minute I saw it produced, as it was produced, in theory, as unrehearsed Shakespeare, I immediately was a groundling again. I was there seeing it in a modern setting. I was there as I would be seeing it if I were in that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I'm talking about, is a classic piece automatically stuffy, or can it be as accessible as a modern piece depending on how it's produced, on how it's done?
I am so glad you asked me, Sarah Frame, because I am ready for an answer. There is a beautiful line in Peter Schaeffer's play Amadeus, where Mozart says that of his fellow Italian composers, that they write operas with characters so stuffy, it seems as though they were shitting marble. And it's this idea, we talk about that in the unrehearsed Shakespeare Company of Chicago, we talk about that all the time at every workshop. You don't want shitting marble characters. You don't want,
to be or not to be.
You want something, you know, you want soliloquies where they actually are asking you questions, having this question. Or alternatively, depending on your interpretation of Hamlet, where they're actually trying to just see Polonius behind the curtain. And it's this idea of, for me, especially Shakespeare, more than anything else, has been warped by performances into this, you know, like, this thing. This, like, look, I am doing poetry, and the thing I am doing is so important that this, your suspension of disbelief, yeah, it's masturbatory Shakespeare, and it's boring, and no one
just made a hand motion. I won't describe it, but...
A masturbatory.
Inappropriate hand motion.
But our point is that Shakespeare never performed his plays.